I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Friday, and I'm here with Anna Navarro. This is Behind the Table. Hello, Anna. How are you?
I'm good. Are you?
I'm good. We had a really big week. Again, we're having a really big month, but we had Vice President Kamala Harris with us this week. Now, what did you think of the appearance in general? I thought it was terrific.
You know, I think she did great. I thought she was very solid in all the questions, and we hit her with a ton of different topics. You know, I kind of felt like that book and movie, like Stella Got Her Groove Back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a difficult transition for her into being vice president. She was excellent in the Senate, particularly when she's in fight mode, when she was questioning people at hearings. I thought she was terrific. And I thought she was particularly poignant and good and just so effective talking about reproductive rights. And it hit me that this is the first time in 244 years that we actually have someone with a uterus talking about reproductive rights and the difference that that makes. So she is uniquely qualified to talk about this because, first of all, she understands a woman's reproductive system, which is more than I can say for a lot of the men mandating what a woman should do with her uterus.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a prosecutor of sex crimes in California. So she knows the horror of a child having a child, of a child getting raped, of a child getting pregnant. She knows those horrors. So she talks about it in such a personal way, with a voice of experience and compassion. I thought she was particularly good. And I think that's one of the issues that's going to be make or break in this election, because we continue seeing horrible stories on a weekly basis.
Well, you asked her that question about abortion rights that's been picked up a lot. And even Fox News praised her. Kayleigh McEnany was saying that, you know, she answered that exactly the right way for the Democrats. Were you surprised by that?
You know, I'm always surprised when Fox News talks about us, which is actually a lot. You know, there was a time when sometimes people would stop me and say, "Oh, you know what? I just saw you on Fox News." They thought I worked on Fox News
because they play
instead
clips
of
so often.
ABC or CNN, because they play so many clips of me and attack me.
Right.
You know, and I'd have to clarify. Kayleigh, what's her name? I can't even pronounce her last name. Is she's from what I've read, very much a Christian. And I think one of the things that Kamala did very effectively also is say, you don't have to give up your faith to understand that there's a separation between church and state. You don't have to give up your faith to understand that you shouldn't be telling somebody else what to do with their body. And so I thought that was a very particularly good message. But also, look, the proof is in the ballot.
Right.
The proof is in the pudding. They've lost in Ohio. They've lost in Kansas. These are not liberal bastions.
Mm-hmm.
And every time abortion is on the ballot, has been on the ballot since the Dobbs decision, Republicans have lost.
Now, after the interview, you went to a luncheon with the vice president. Tell me about that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we went... We went and met with a group of folks who really just wanted to talk with her. It was off the record, small group of, you know, she's of people who hopefully will be energized and engaged by the campaign. She's going to be out there a lot. And, you know, one of the things that I actually wanted to ask her about on the show that I didn't get to, that we ran out of time, was the role of her husband, Doug. Mm-hmm. Because, and I said this to her afterwards, I said, you know, you are the first woman vice president, and I never want to take that for granted. I never want to take for granted that there were 244 years and 49 men before we got the first woman vice president. But also, she's given us the first second gentleman, the first male that's a spouse. of a principal.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave up an incredibly lucrative, successful career. He was an entertainment lawyer in L.A. at a very large law firm, and he did very, very well. And he gave that up in the prime of his life, at the height of his career, to come support his wife and this administration. And he's done so seamlessly to the point where we almost don't talk about it, right? We don't even mm-hmm. think about it. And he's out there practically every day on behalf of this administration.
He's been a big voice against anti-Semitism
yeah. during COVID, small business. And I love what Doug Emhoff means and the example he is setting for marriages, for spouses, for gender equality.
I'd like to have them on together also. But I'd love to have him on anytime. We got to work on that.
I love him. He's such a mensch.
You mentioned that this is something you wanted to ask about, but we ran out of time, which brings me to another conversation. So there's been some fodder online about you scolding the show and by proxy me.
I wasn't scolding the show. I was scolding you.
You were scolding me. Well, it was written up like you were scolding the show, but you were scolding me for playing music at the end of the vice president's last segment. So here's the thing I'm trying to explain to everyone, and particularly the hosts who you think would understand this. Time is linear and finite, as we've discussed many times, and we're a live show. At a certain point, the show goes away. At a certain point, we run out of time, the commercials play, the next show comes on TV, and we are out of time. So in a perfect world, you guys are aware of the time we have left, and we'll wrap up, or we'll say, oh, we're out of time, I'm so sorry, in the most polite, wonderful way possible. Because you are so passionate, all of you, you get a little bit wrapped up in these things. And unfortunately, you don't take the time cues.
I don't like the way you're looking at me as you're going through this conversation.
You're the only one in the room.
Well, I don't think this should be a conversation had just with me.
No, it's a conversation that needs to be had with every single one of the people there. And of course, nobody wants to interrupt someone like the Vice President of the United States, but you also don't want to cut them off because the local news starts at 12 o'clock. My first day on the show, the first time I ever worked here, I miscalculated the time we had, and we did not have a last segment. We never said goodbye. This is in 2015, and we overbooked my first show here, me and the other executive producers at the time, and the show just never, for the people at home, they never saw the end of the show because it just cut off and another show started. That's in the back of my head all of the time. So when I interrupt somebody by playing music, you're not being played off because I don't like what you're saying. You're not being played off because I'm interrupting or trying to protect the world from hearing what you have to say. You're being played off because we're out of time.
And yeah, but can I say two things? Number
please.
One, you read way too much stuff.
Yes, I do.
From social media.
Yes.
It's not healthy.
No,
I don't
it's
read
not.
Anything. Unless you send it to me, I don't even know what's happening.
I know.
Second of all, I think people don't understand that you and me and, you know, mm-hmm. most of us have a very good banter.
Yes.
And we joke with each other. And there's
yes.
a lot of things we say to each other jokingly or in jest or in humor.
Yes.
That they think is serious. I mean, I wasn't scolding you.
No.
I was kind of like, you know, I was
ribbing.
It was a quip. It was a,
yes.
it was ribbing you. When I'm scolding you, they'll mm-hmm. know it. Like,
right,
really,
so we'll
you shouldn't read
no.
all this stuff.
Right. But just for the record, I'm sitting here saying, please don't make me have to play music right now. Please
oh, have
let
we
me
told
go to
them
break.
How you read all the reviews to this podcast? You're like obsessed.
I tell people
you
this.
Send me the ones in Spanish.
Well, because I need them to be translated.
And I tell you how they all say that you're a horrible human being
yes.
and you're obnoxious and condescending
yes.
and
yes,
annoying.
All those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And then I check on Google Translate and you're lying and they love everybody. But yeah, no, I am appreciative of the people that listen to the podcast every day, and I'm really appreciative of the ones that take the time to leave a review or to rate us and follow us. So it's important. Speaking of which,
I wish I knew how to leave a review so I could leave one for you under some other name, but I don't know how to do it.
I'm appreciative that you haven't figured that out. So on that note, we have recently started a hotline
mm-hmm.
where people can, it's the View Behind the Table hotline where people can ask questions. And the first one we're ever playing is a question for you.
Hi, Brian, and all of the View team. This is your favorite 28-year-old gay boy, Justin. I guess my question is, what are the policies that you disagree with that would be on the Democratic side?
Okay, so this is interesting because, and thank you, Justin. This is interesting because a question we get a lot, because you are a Republican, but you are a supporter of President Biden, Vice President Harris, And I get that question often. Why hasn't Anna become a Democrat? You've talked about not recognizing the Republican Party in its current form. Are there things that the Democrats are doing that would stop you from going all the way there? Do you just think you're more effective as a member of the party still? What you must get this question.
You know, I think people who haven't been politically active their entire life, like I've been in a much lesser way than, let's say, Liz Cheney, but like Liz Cheney has been, don't understand how difficult the evolution is, right? Because it's more than policies for me. I, you know, grew up since I was a kid, since I was like 13 years old, volunteering in campaigns, going to campaign headquarters in Miami and party headquarters. I'm married to the former Republican Party of Florida chair and former chair of the American Conservative Union. This was such a huge part of my life, being a Republican. And I would say that being a Republican in the 90s and 2000 in Florida, where I was represented by people like Jeb Bush, like Lincoln Diaz-Balart, Ileana Ross Leighton, is very different than the Republican Party of today in Florida. Certainly a world of difference from Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. So I firmly believe in the need for two healthy parties competing for our votes, offering ideas, offering bipartisan solutions. I firmly believe it even more so for minority communities. I think the worst thing that can happen to African Americans, to Latinos, is for one party to openly antagonize you and another party to take you for granted. And so that's you know, a lot of me trying to explain and justify. I think there's also some psychobabble involved. I honestly, because I've thought about this a lot, I honestly can't stand the idea of being pushed out of something, of a party, of a group where I belonged my entire life. And I think that's kind of like trauma of me having to flee Nicaragua when I was 8 years old. I told you this was psychobabble, and it got policy-wise. I disagree with a lot of the things that part of the Republican Party is espousing right now. I agree with a lot of Mitt Romney, for example. I agree with a lot of what he's talking about. I agree with a lot of what an Asa Hutchinson, the former governor of Arkansas, are talking about. On the Democratic side, there are policies that I disagree with. I have an issue with Joe Biden's policy and Democratic policy in general towards places like Cuba, like Venezuela, like Nicaragua. You know, opening up Cuba is something that I disagree with. I'm very close to it. I know Cuban political prisoners, and I don't think it's gotten any better since Obama did that change of policy. I think, in fact, it's gotten worse and the repression has gotten worse. I'm very troubled by lifting the sanctions on Venezuela, because the level of repression and corruption in that country is what's leading to the massive immigration influx at the border. And I have a lot of disagreements with the extreme left of the Democratic Party. You know, when I listen to a Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I'm much more in line with Joe Biden, with Chuck Schumer, with Nancy Pelosi than I am with Steny Hoyer, than I am with that. And I'm also in extreme disagreement with the extreme right and now the Trump wing of the Republican Party. The difference is that I think the extreme left on the Democratic side is very much the minority and not running the party. If you see who the actual leaders are, on the Republican side, the extreme right and that MAGA wing are running the party, are defining the party. You know, and it's very hard for me because most of the Republicans who I looked up to, who I followed, who I admired, who were kind of like my touchstones, have either retired or lost elections or are completely irrelevant or have died. And so it's harder and harder to find a Republican who's relevant in today's Republican Party with whom I agree. But I really hope that at some point we get to to have two healthy parties again. I hope it happens in my lifetime, even if I'm 100 years old.
Is it fair to say that you're hopeful, or you could see a version of the world at some point where there's a Republican Party more familiar to you than one you left?
I don't know anymore. And then that was the question we asked Liz Cheney, right? Mm-hmm. Is the Republican Party salvageable? And the reason that I tell you I don't know, look, politics swings on a pendulum.
Right.
And it goes way to one side, and then it goes all the way to the other. And we see this happening time and time again. I hoped, stupidly perhaps, but I hoped, and I think many others in the Republican Party thought so, that if and when Trump went away and lost, the fever would break.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I see is, yeah, he lost, but he doesn't admit he lost, and he hasn't gone away. But more than that, the problem is that there's been a lot of new Republicans voted into local, state, federal offices in his image. People that talk like him and think like him and act like him. People like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ron DeSantis, and, you know, who are very extreme and who are very hostile and divisive and, you know, use horrible language. And so I don't think the fever breaks right now. And if he, you know, if he loses this election, if he loses the primary, he's going to say it was rigged.
But if the far left liberal part of the Democratic Party became the empowered one, and the more moderate side of the Republican Party once again became part of in control of the Republicans, you could see yourself on that side again.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
if I had to vote between, I'm just saying something. If I had to vote between, I don't know, Rashida Tlaib or Liz Cheney, I would vote for Liz Cheney.
Right.
And Liz Cheney says something in her book in the epilogue. She says, we can survive 4 years of bad policy, referring mm-hmm. to Biden,
right.
with whom she has great policy disagreements. She says, we can survive 4 years of bad policy. We can't survive 4 years of someone who wants to destroy the Constitution. And that's, you know, that's basically the right. way I feel. I think I'm a moderate middle of the roader. I really don't want anybody telling people what to do with their private lives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anybody telling you who to have sex with, who to marry, who to love, what to do with your body. I want government out of your bedroom and out of your life, out of your private life. That's supposed to be a conservative value.
Right.
Small
privacy.
Government,
yeah.
Privacy, freedoms are supposed to be conservative values. It's just that this conservative party is unrecognizable.
Yeah, there's not a lot of nuance anymore.
Right.
Anything, which is crazy. All right. Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate the person calling in. So if there's more thoughts you guys have and you want to ask some questions, that was a good one, and I look forward to hearing more. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is Sunny Hostin. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/view. Just go to Indeed.com/view right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/view. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Shopify. Ready to make the smartest choice for your business? Say hello to Shopify, the global commerce platform that makes selling a breeze. Whether you're starting your online shop, opening your first physical store, or hitting a million orders, Shopify is your growth partner. Sell everywhere with Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. Turn browsers into buyers with Shopify's best converting checkout, 36% better than other platforms. Effortlessly sell more with Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Did you know Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and supports global brands like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen? Join millions of successful entrepreneurs across 175 countries backed by Shopify's extensive support and help resources. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Start your success story today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/view. Put it all in lowercase. Go to shopify.com/view now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/view.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. Now, all week long, we've been having discussions in the Hot Topics meeting about the differences between Gen Z, millennials versus older generations. Everything from their fears of getting older and not being able to afford the things they want to just what actually makes what are the defining characteristics of these groups. How do you feel about it?
I have a hard time remembering where one starts and the other one ends. I think COVID has drastically changed people, particularly people who are in their formative years. We haven't even seen what it's going to do to the kids who were in school and were taken out of school, what the long-term effects are. I think it has drastically affected the generation of Gen Zs because, you know, here they were in their very early 20s, going into the workforce, and all of a sudden they see, you know, all these people who worked for 30 years, 40 years die, you know. And so I think it made experiences a priority. It made fulfillment and happiness a priority. Really, you don't see in the generations that preceded me, there was, you know, it was like the corporate loyalty. I think this generation is loyal to themselves and to their feelings. I also think they have different priorities, and it's difficult for somebody like me to understand because when I was growing up, nothing signified success more than owning your own home, right? That was, people worked their entire lives to pay the mortgage and by the time they retired, have a house that was free and clear, and it was their nest egg. Today, you know, the kids, you know, Al has children. So I have stepchildren that are in this age group. They're, you know, mid, late 20s. And they think renting is a smarter choice. And frankly, when I look at the numbers, I'm not sure they're incorrect.
Yeah.
Because when I look at the cost of, you know, you're talking about 8% mortgage rate. You're talking about a huge increase, at least in Miami and Florida, and in taxes, huge increase in cost of housing, huge increase in the cost of insurance. You know, you rent, you got none of those problems. And in the meantime, you can, you know, go to Africa and to the bachelorette party in Ibiza, and, you know.
You are somebody who does, I understand it's a different generation and some of the things are hard to understand, but you enjoy an experience. I mean, you know, you've earned these things over time. But I think you would understand that too.
But I love, so my niece, who was a teacher in Florida, my niece is probably about 30 years old. She was a teacher in a school in Florida, and she just told me she and a group of girlfriends are going for 2 weeks to Africa, and she was asking me for recommendations. She is prioritizing this and seeing the world. I will tell you, I think I've told you this before, but something that really impacted my life was losing my brother.
Yeah.
at 38. My brother died of a massive heart attack when he was 38 years old. And I was, you know, I was in my 20s. And I, you know, since the moment he died like that, I just want to live hard. I want to live fast.
I understand that.
I want to experience. I want to, in Spanish, we have this saying, que me quiten lo bailado. Let them try to take away from me what I've already danced.
Mm-hmm.
I think about it all the time. Like, oh, my, you know, when I have a birthday, my gosh, I've now lived 10 more years than Tuto lived. I've now lived 12 more years than Tuto lived. And I want to be able to do all these things that I wish he had gotten to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Well, it's interesting. And it's a conversation we're going to keep having because The View at its core is a show about different generations and perspectives. All right. So before we go, there was a headline this week saying that you were spotted at a Miami club with half naked dancers. Do you care to respond to this story?
Well, first of all, it's 80 degrees in Miami.
Sure.
Second of all, it's Miami. We're all half naked. What's the point of having a Brazilian butt lift and fake boobs if you're not going to be showing them, for God's sakes?
To be clear, this is not you talking about yourself with the Brazilian butt lift.
I don't have anything fake other than my hair color and the hair extensions. Oh, and the lashes. But I reserve the right.
Sure.
To, you know, one day lift and add and pump and stretch and whatever.
Talk about experiences.
But, and if I do, yesterday I saw this post from Eva Longoria, and she had all these pictures of her in the 90s in like red carpets, and she's half naked in all the pictures. And she said in the post, why was I always showing my midriff, on red carpets in the 90s, and I'm looking at this bitch, and she's got this washboard stomach. And so, I wrote a comment. If I had your stomach, I would have shown up to the red carpet with two coconuts and a fig leaf. So thankfully, I've been fat and chubby and, you know, and had stretch marks my entire life. So you will never find a naked picture of me ever, ever, ever. But
when you go to the club, you're going to be surrounded by half naked people.
Well, but it was a wonderful restaurant, by the way, called Delilah. There's one in Las Vegas and one somewhere else. I don't know if it's here or where. And it was, you know what it was? It was like a 1920s style supper club.
Okay.
And so there was this gorgeous woman singing. There were these women with bobs and peacock feathers in their head, but dressed like in that 1920s look, dancing randomly. And it was just, and you know what they had on the menu?
What?
Pigs in a blanket, which I love.
Sure.
I could not love them more. They had, the menu was terrific. And I go to these places because my best friend works in the food industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Your best friend, Lee Schrager.
Oh, shut up.
That's his full name.
My best friend, Lee Schrager.
Yes.
You know what? My best friend, Lee Schrager, and I are going to go see Madonna.
Oh.
On the 29th. So we can talk about that.
We can
that
bet
week.
The over-under on when she walks out. All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you spending this time with me. As always, I look forward to Fridays. Thank you for joining me on Monday.
I wasn't even mean to you today. I feel like I haven't done my job appropriately.
You were a little mean. You were
what
mean
did I say to
in
you?
In the beginning, but the playing you off stuff and all that. It was
okay, fine. Yeah,
we got
ahead.
A little bit. We'll fight more next week. Thank you for joining me. I'll be back with Sarah. In the meantime, if you have questions for me or the co-host, like I said, check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline. Keep leaving reviews, keep following, keep downloading, keep telling your friends, and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the snow.
Enjoy the snow.
Behind the Table is executive produced by Brian Tedda. Supervising producers are Nathan Getty and Summer Shake, with production assistant Emily Darcy. The vice president of ABC Audio is Liz Alessi, and the executive producer of podcast programming is Laura Mayer. Special thanks to Lori Hogan, Susie Liu, Meg Fierro, Enza Dolce Nini, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Frankie Perez, Audrey Mostek, and Dana Schaefer.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.